We will do this in a row. The next one is is Kim, and she needs the the control.
Okay, great. Thank you, Nana. Thank you, Rana and Katrine and Nana and all the organizers. And again, another round, so thank you for continuing the discussion. Yesterday, I focused a little bit more pessimistically on the monsters in our present and monsters in our past, and I ended with a comment that we can also think about migration as a political movement, particularly with migrants and refugees themselves demanding the freedom of movement. And so that's where I want to pick up, and I want to think about whether the movement across borders can move borders, territorial, normative, and ontological. We've certainly seen an upsurge in recent years of mobilizations around this. And in a piece that Ilka Attach and Maurice Steele and I co-edited recently in Citizenship Studies, I'm going to just quote from that. We talk about the political mobilizations by refugees, irregularized migrants, and solidarity activists that have emerged, demanding and enacting the right to move and to stay, struggling for citizenship and human rights, and protesting the violence and deadliness of contemporary border regimes. And that these struggles regularly transverse the local and constitute trans-border, trans-categorical, and in fact can be considered social movements. And I think it's actually the recent recent article movement issue, CritNet issue, that talks about this as the new era of protest in our times. And when we think about this, again, we think of a variety of types of political action, collective political actions that take on forms such as marches, hunger strikes, occupations of public sites, and protest camps. Refugees and migrants and those working in solidarity with them, demanding advocacy for human rights, freedom of movement, fair asylum process, access to labor markets, demonstrating resistance against detention, deportations, dispersals, struggles around missing migrants, subverting and challenging border barriers, so numerous forms that these take. Yesterday we heard also all of our panelists spoke about examples of these. Bernd spoke about the Hungarian border, this long summer of 2015, and the movement which ended up into a corridor across the border. Isabel spoke about the forensic architecture and the mobilizations that are happening at the Mediterranean Sea, which I'll come back to today, and maybe we'll pick up that discussion. Sandro spoke about the movement across from Central America through Mexico to the U.S., particularly from the train La Bestia. Ramsey again today speaking about legal activism. Avery, we could take her discussion around fugitiveness and thinking about the underground movement, but connecting that also to sanctuary city movements in the 1980s in the U.S., and particularly now a new underground movement. We hear of people in Afghanistan, for example, who will have a little paper on them that says the sanctuary, the shelter in Buffalo, where they know if they get there, they can get to Canada. So we can think of that as sort of a new forms of flight and how we support that. And then Birgitta gave us some very provocative images, I think, of women migrants, and I think that engages us to think about migration struggles and feminist struggles in the relationship and what kind, and engendering our own language. I've given you a list of a vocabulary, but how do we engender that? And think about other vocabulary and what gets lost out of that, and maybe where women's perspectives in movement challenges some of our language that we have. And Zoran then also asked us to challenge our language as well in terms of thinking about the language of music and literature and the arts and how that can give us a new vocabulary. And also writing that experience through, for example, in this case, second generation Turkish Germans, and what stories of migration can help us to see and think differently about some of these, this new political struggle era of protest that we're in. So, situating it within all of that, I want to just say a few things about the concept. I'm using the concept bordering solidarities, so bear with me, I'm a little bit longer, I think, than 5 minutes, but I'll try and condense this as I go. You know, we often think about the border in terms of Trump's wall, and so I guess the question that I kind of want to push forward is to think about the border in terms of the solidarities that emerge in these, you know, particular points of violence that happen. And I'm also interested in thinking about, you know, this notion of bridging and building relational ontologies between guest and host, citizen and newcomer, that are not based on exclusion, but engagement with difference, and that challenge antagonistic forms that we set up between self and other. And I think this is important in the particular moment, because if citizenship is not going to be a project of right-wing politics and a basis for exclusionary identity, then I think we need to think about alternative ways of practicing citizenship. We might talk about not engaging with citizenship, but in the current moment, I think it's also important to think about how we challenge and open up that concept as well. And one of the things I would note is that we, you know, I guess the question is, can we think about citizenship differently and less exclusionary? So from one perspective, we have this history of citizenship being very much linked to exclusion, to nation-state building, colonialism. But on the other hand, as Angan Eisen and Peter Nierisch have pointed out, this history has also been very much made by people excluded from it, who are constantly expanding the boundaries of who can be included. And also in a performative way, where people who do not have necessary legal status basically demand to be included. So they talk about acts of citizenship, for example. And Peter Nierisch points out, he says, you know, can we think about this as remaking citizenship from the margins? He says, if it provides a deep challenge to classic questions about politics, what counts as political activity, who is a member of the political community, and who can be considered a political subject. One of the things that I would just note is that a lot of work, even on critical citizenship, assumes by definition that citizenship must be about a hierarchical border of inclusion and exclusion, right? Between members who are citizens and have rights and between those outside who do not. And of course, we problematize that with thinking more properly about gradations of status, right? Pathways into precarity, pathways into legality, etc. But we usually assume that citizenship is fundamentally about a relationship between self and other, and one that is necessarily antagonistic and hierarchical. And so the question is, can we get a new vocabulary around the border to think about the border not necessarily as hierarchical, but relational, that is based on a relational ontology. And so I want to just kind of give a few examples to think about migrant and refugee struggles and the activism which particularly emerges around the border, that emerges out of solidarity and that in some ways has the potential to provide space to think about an openness or at least a desire for that to enter into a relationship with others that's not necessarily predetermined from the outset by hierarchy. And I think we need to kind of take that on and think about that. And so I speak about that as a form of transgressive citizenship politics. And so I want to think about whether we can think through those moments in ways that they basically are based on transnational networks of building transnational political community, so they're transgressive of the territorial border, but then also the way that they might involve disrupting borders of status and belonging that define political community, so being transgressive of ontological borders, and then also transgressive in terms of normative sense, that they're motivated out of social justice. And so maybe I can just give a couple examples to situate this. The Turkish border, and again, Berend, you might be able to speak more to this, since I believe probably some of what I say you might even have, you might be involved in. We were talking about 2010, which is going back to a moment when I'll talk about. So this map is basically, and maybe many of you are familiar with it, so I only put it up because in case you're not, but the Turkish-Greek border on the Evros, there's an Evros-Meriç River, which is a picture of it, that runs across here. It looks quite like you could actually swim across it, right? It doesn't look very dangerous, but in fact, the waters get quite deep, and people are often have often drowned across trying to cross that border. The village of Sidro, which I'm going to talk about, is located in the hills northwest of the town of Soufli in the Evros region of Greece, about 60 kilometers from this river. The village is home to about 465 Muslim Turkish Greeks, but it's also the site of a large cemetery where the bodies are buried of migrants who have died, either drowning or freezing to death crossing this river as they attempt to cross from Turkey into Greece. According to the villagers, as of 2014, when I was last there, there was about 400 people who had died and buried there, which is almost the size of the village itself, so almost making it like a form of necropolitics, a necropolis, if you think of it that way. And of course, we see here, too, that the village is an extension of the border. You know, to use Balibar's terms, it's a diffusion of the border, so we have to conceptualize and challenge our thinking of what constitutes borders. The story here of Sidro, officials began transporting the bodies from the river to the hills in the Muslim villages, basically making the assumption that most of the villagers were Muslims. And the villagers of Sidro explained that they and the Muftu, the religious leader of the Evros region, became concerned because they believed that the migrants were not giving a proper Muslim burial. And so the Muftu and the villagers became actively involved in the burial process. The Sidro cemetery shown here appears as a fenced-off area of dirt, and it's really only when you get in and upon closer inspection that you can actually see that there are mounds of dirt here under which bodies are buried. And there's no, as you can see, markers for the people buried, although the Muftu says that he does keep a plan of the cemetery where he has a protocol number for where each person is actually buried. But he also admits that as the weeds grow, these individual markers will become insignificant over time. Villagers, it's interesting when they explain and talk about their role and act involved in this, they talk about this very much as an act of responsibility, fulfilling the proper duty. They talk about giving a life that wasn't possible to the people who died as a proper afterlife. And they don't use the term multiji or migrants, but they use a more universal collective language. So they will refer to them as people as human beings who have died, and they will talk about there's so much human waste, for example. The deaths are a waste of human lives. Insan zinyale. These deaths are the effects of citizenship as a globalizing regime of government, as the U.S. invests in greater border controls, placing Frontex guards at the border and helping to fund a fence across the river. And of course, part of this politics prior to the more recent times was a politics of pushback, or what's known as black deportations, where Greek police officers basically didn't want to register them in Eurodac and would often push them back, punching holes in the boats. And there's a very good reports on this by Pro Isul, for example, on this. But in addition to this story about villagers being mobilized in solidarity to help even after the fact, there is also a story here about mobilization of Greek and German activists working together in solidarity to help families find and discover what's happened to missing loved ones. So the Welcome to Europe Network describes itself as a grassroots movement that embraces migration and wants to create a Europe of hospitality. The network became involved in helping relatives, some of who lived in Germany, but also from countries of Iran, Iraq, Afghanistan, to find relatives who had gone missing. And as I understand it, the project was first inspired by German activists using a van around Germany, the Infomobile, to collect information and help those. And this was how Sidero was found, and I don't know if you were, that's why I mentioned, I don't know if you were involved in that original group, but in 2010, found the original cemetery at the time, which had 200 people buried there. And part of this activism then involves memorialization or commemoration. So to commemorate the lives of people who died trying to cross into Greece, the Infomobile group decided to hold a ceremony at Tichiro. In coming together, it's important to think about the words they decided to put together. They had a ceremony and they said, "We want to give back a piece of dignity to those whose lives disappeared right here into the senselessness of European borders. We gathered for giving back a piece of dignity also to those who survived. A piece of dignity that was lost on the way to Europe, like the passports or the photographs showing the faces of the beloved ones that are carried away by the water. We want to give back a piece of dignity to all of us who feel ashamed in the moment of these deaths because we failed in our attempt to stop this murderous regime and to create a welcoming Europe." So these days, of course, we hear much more about people crossing on the islands, Lesbos, Chios, for example, particularly after August 2012 with Operation Zeus and with some 1,800 Greek border police and along with Frontex being employed at the border. And as Stephanie Grant, a lawyer, talks about this as a hydraulic effect where you close one border and obviously people will move elsewhere. At some point, the UNHCR talks about 3,300 people a day arriving in Lesbos. But prior to the arrival of so many people in Lesbos, there was, of course, activism there, the community in Lesbos being very actively involved, 27 NGOs involved in helping support. Now there was in the past while a more professionalization of external NGOs, if you like, coming in. But I think it's important to remember all the activism of the villagers, of people living on Lesbos, Mytilene, and the creation of things like PIKPA, an attempt to create an alternative type of reception center, which would be based on collective, for example, cooking together and open space, to try to do things differently and to try to create a different type of space for people where they were not necessarily treated as criminals, incarcerated, as in Moria. And I'm just trying to give some examples around sort of commemorization and how this is bringing peoples together. So we have the villagers in the Turkish village, we have the villagers in Lesbos. We also have people like Youth Without Borders, a network of young refugees based in Germany who passed through Lesbos on their journey to Europe and who have since then returned with the intention of giving back to others who assisted them and to newcomers arriving on the island. Returning to Lesbos, members explained that some of them returned to mourn their lost relatives. But they also note that they have journeyed back to Lesbos because they have experienced the solidarity of the people here on Lesbos and because they wanted to encourage and support the newcomers. And there are important groups now, also Watch the Med being one, the Alarm Phone Project. Maurice Stirl has very good pieces on this if you're interested in reading further, who's involved in this. Of a basically a hotline to rescue, to help rescue boats that are in distress across the Mediterranean and Aegean Seas. And again, this network is transnational. It's made up of people across Africa, North America, Europe, speaking many different languages, many of them whom themselves have had the experience of crossing, who are now trying to find boats, locate them in the sea, and help people who are distressed, or else try to negotiate with various coast guards to intervene. So alongside, I picked this moment as one of the, you know, particularly the most violence at the border that we see, right, manifest in deaths. But also at that moment of violence, we see increasing growing activism of politicized groups of non-citizen migrants and families of migrants who have died or gone missing, and then activists and villagers working in solidarity with them. And this is what Maurice Stirl, in a recent article on citizenship studies, calls grief activism, which is based around reclaiming and memorializing the missing. Such a politics is important for the way it challenges citizenship as a biopolitical regime, because as Jenny Edkins argues, this demand for an accounting of the missing by mobilizing around the right to know what happened to relatives, to reclaim the body, or to have a proper burial, is akin to a demand to be counted as a person rather than an object of government, and can therefore be disruptive of the normal biopolitical order. So she says there's an intriguing connection between what happens of missing persons, or what happens when people go missing, and the ways in which personhood is regularly produced under current forms of political order in the West. A politics that misses the person, a politics that objectifies and instrumentalizes. She argues that the search for the missing and protests surrounding disappearances more broadly can be written as a demand for, or indeed an expression of, a different form of politics, one where the person as such counts. It could be called a politics of the person as missing. So, just by way of conclusion, I mean, I think these are some of the examples of how of what Nevzat Sok talks about in terms of the function of the border that emerges not just through practices of separation, but practices of relationality that become possible in moments of tensions, conflicts, and contradictions. And the question is whether we can think about in this bleak moment also moments of transgressiveness. These moments show, for example, transnational solidarity, physically created by crossing borders, by people coming from different locations. But when they come together, when people come together, it's not as Greek and German activists, Turkish-Greek villagers, or people from elsewhere, but it's coming together as one community that are mobilized through grief with an obligation to honor the dead. As the memorial blog at Lesbos reminds us about the importance of coming together, solidarity and friendship can help us to survive the loss, but it is also important to remember that those who died were on the way to change their lives of their own. Their death is the death in search of freedom, and that concerns us all. And so maybe I'll just, I feel like I should just end on that note. But yeah, just to say, you know, you can see these various levels of ontological transgression. We're not thinking about the binaries, we're coming together. We're doing so through actual physical movement, through transgressing notions of territory, and then motivated by transgressing norms, the norms of the nation-state system, in demands for social justice and demands for the right to freedom of movement for all. I'll end there.